Hello and welcome to African Media. I'm Zinat Hansrod. My guests today are Kelvin Lewis in Sierra Leone and Linus Kaikai in Kenya. And we're going to discuss how to report sensitive issues so as not to fuel existing tensions in the country. Linus Kaikai has been a journalist for 20 years now, working for radio and TV outlets in Kenya. Linus worked his way through the ranks from reporter to being now the general manager of NTV, Nation Television, a private channel owned by the Nation Media Group. Kelvin Lewis in Sierra Leone has been in the game for some 30-odd years. He's the founder and editor-in-chief of Idaily Awoko. Kelvin Lewis is also the president of the Sierra Leone Association of Journalists, SLAJ, a position he has occupied for 4 years and is currently working on a training program for journalists on balanced political reporting and conflict-sensitive reporting. Kelvin, presidential elections in Sierra Leone are due in March 2018. Is that the reason why, as the president of SLAJ, you've set up this training program?
Yes, because even now there are signs that the situation might get a bit fractious. The people who have come forward to stand for political positions, they are being attacked from different sides. And if the situation is not managed well, it might lead into serious conflict. And we also see that there are possibilities that ethnicity and regionalism can come in, because that is the bane of our politics in Sierra Leone. So in order to be able to manage the situation well, that is why we're thinking of going down that line, looking at balanced political reporting and also looking at conflict-sensitive reporting.
And we're talking about how many journalist-owned media outlets in Sierra Leone?
About 70 radio stations, about 120 newspapers, and we're talking around 600 to 800 journalists.
They're mostly concentrated in the capital, Freetown.
Yes, mostly. The newspapers are concentrated in Freetown. We have a few in the main regional centers. That is all.
And what's the most popular media?
Radio is much more popular. We have only 3 television stations, 2 commercial and 1 which is government-owned. But radio is much more popular.
Broadcasting in how many languages?
They like to broadcast in their local languages, but mainly there's one universal language in Sierra Leone, which is Creole, or rather it's English, and most radio stations broadcast in that language.
And how many other languages do they use?
We have about 17 other languages, but we have about 5 which are very popular. In the east of the country, the main language that's spoken is Mende, and so you have radio stations having programs in Mende. And in the north, the most widely spoken local language there is Kimini. In the western area, which has Freetown, it is mainly Creole.
So we're looking at a media landscape with diverse languages, diverse ethnic group, and a very strong presence of radio. How are you setting up to do this training program? Is it difficult for you to reach the people who are in the rural areas outside the capital?
Yes, but what we've set out to do is to have at least 4 training sessions. We have one in each region. We have 4 regions, the north, the south, the east, and the western area. So we're going to ask all the journalists within those regions to converge in one town, which is normally the headquarters town of the region, and then we conduct the training there.
Linus Kaikai, post-elections violence has unfortunately been a recurring feature in Kenya. You're just out of the August general elections. Do you have a feeling that even though there are still people being killed, the level of violence is decreasing and not as bad as in 2007 when over 1,000 people died as a result of post-election violence?
That is correct, Zinat. The level of violence has dramatically dropped. Post-election violence, that is, I think the worst form of violence was had in 2007-2008 against the backdrop of a very disputed general election. And what we've seen in the last 2 elections, that's 2013 and 2017, is a community and a country that has grown sensitive to causes of this violence, and necessary steps have been taken to avoid that. One of the steps that have really made this last election relatively peaceful was the fact that the threat for consequences was real, whether it's individual politicians who were known to have incited people in 2007 or the population generally. It was very, very clear that if you go down that route again, remember, for you, the politicians, the International Criminal Court can come in. And for you, the local citizen, the local courts can come in, and there'll be consequences for that violence.
Did the media in Kenya play a positive role here?
Absolutely. The media for the last two elections has played an active role in trying to avert a scenario that would end up in a violent aftermath of the election. In 2013, primarily how the media helped play that role was to organize presidential debates where all the eight candidates were engaged on a number of national issues that are affecting the country, to set the agenda openly to the public. What this did was to try and change the narrative where you reduce focus on tribes, focus on ethnic communities, and bring instead in its place focus on issues. And that the media did achieve in 2013. An attempt to do the same in 2017, that is this just concluded election, was not as successful as last time because, first of all, the debate was skipped by the incumbent president, Uhuru Kenyatta. And also there were a lot of controversies around participation of other candidates. They all wanted to engage the top two candidates. Of course, our format also did change, but not in a successful way as it was in 2013. But the debates did help, you know, generally to focus the country's attention on issues as opposed to ethnic groups.
This is Kelvin. Linus, I know that the elections in 2013 had a serious ethnic bias, and that was particularly what led to the many killings. How were you able to tame down the ethnic sensibilities? I mean, people linking their candidates with ethnic regions and that sort of thing.
Well, first of all, Kelvin, the use of ethnicity as a mobilization tool is still very much strong and very much alive in Kenyan politics. It is exactly the approach taken by the main players. First of all, rally your tribe behind you and then build a coalition of tribes to meet the other coalition of tribes. So ethnicity as a mobilization tool remains very much strong in Kenyan politics. How the media navigated this was to try, and I say try because it's been very, very difficult for the media, to try and avoid direct references to communities. Stick to the party names. For example, there are two major parties. The first one is Jubilee Party, which is the party of President Uhuru Kenyatta. Media did deliberately avoid making any references to those communities or tribes, rallied around that Jubilee Party. Then there is the National Super Alliance, NASA, associated with Raila Odinga, the opposition leader. And then again, there is a coalition of tribes that is associated with that bloc. What you will not find in Kenyan media, whether radio, television, or newspapers, is reference to these communities by name. You avoid that absolutely. The other thing that we did to very much drive the country away from these references is to avoid functions or speeches that are generally directed at these communities. Say, for example, when the president is speaking in his native language to his community, that would not find its way to television, that will not find its way to newspapers or radio, because this is considered sometimes offending for the other communities. The same to the Raila Odinga group. When they are talking their language, we leave it to vernacular radio services, we leave it to local newspapers, which are not many in that sense. So we avoid use of those ethnic community languages or references on national media.
In the aftermath to the 2007 elections, some media, namely community radio stations, were charged with inciting violence through hate speeches, Linus. Did Kenya manage to get rid of such media outlets?
What has happened is oversight has improved greatly, meaning the Communication Authority of Kenya, the regulatory body, is keeping an eye over broadcasts on radio, on television, and even what is run on print media to ensure that some of this hate speech that ended up in the International Criminal Court, ICC, in 2007 do not arise again. But the challenge still remains, because what happens is politicians tend to drop their guard when they are speaking in their own languages, when they are speaking in local vernacular tribal radio stations. They tend to drop their guard. Same to presenters. But what has improved greatly is oversight. So Big Brother is watching, Big Brother is listening all the time. What that has done is to improve responsibility on the part of presenters, on the part of producers of shows that are on local radio. Kelvin, how do you in Sierra Leone navigate the challenge of ethnicity and elections? Is it a big issue there?
It is an issue, just like it is an issue with you guys, but it is not so pronounced. Actually, the political landscape is divided into two. The north and the western area naturally always vote for the ruling party, which is the All People's Congress. And the south and the east are the strongholds of the opposition party, the Sierra Leone People's Party, the SLPP. So this has been a void, and we're trying to see how we can navigate around them. But because of the war and the experiences during the war, we have tried not to be talking about ethnicity. And what the media is doing now, we're already starting programs to focus the discussions on issues rather than on dividing stuff like ethnicity and the mudraking, which generally would come during elections. We're trying to remove ourselves from that. We have a national program now, which we call National Dialogue, in which we are focusing on issues, and we are urging all the press to go along with us. But it's so difficult because here the oversight authority is deemed to be not too independent as it was supposed to be. So we're having problems with the oversight issues, and that is mainly the reason why we're having problems with moving along. And also the main reason why I'm trying to do all of this conflict-sensitive and political reporting. Because what happens is those who are in support of the ruling party are allowed to do things which normally they should not be allowed to do, while those who are deemed to be in the opposition, when they step over the line, they are held responsible. So we're trying to see how we can navigate along that. We're holding meetings with the Independent Media Commission to see how we can get them to be a bit more impartial.
Kelvin, it's interesting that that is exactly what is happening now in Kenya. We are increasingly finding ourselves revolving around two political blocks. But in your case, what are the dynamics that inform the North and West divide? Is it tribe? Is it party? Or how exactly did that geographical divide come about?
It is ethnicity. The dominant ethnic group in the North is the Limba and the Dene. And both of these groups make up majority of what is in the All People's Congress. The whole hierarchy of the party is filled up with members from these ethnic groups. Equally so from the other party, the Sierra Leone People's Party, you hardly have Northerners in that party. They are mainly people from the south and east, which is mainly the Mende-speaking tribe. But what they usually do running into elections, they ensure that the All People's Congress, which has the north and west divide, they ensure that they have a candidate who is a Northerner, and then they would go to the east and find somebody in the east in order to be able to draw votes from the other bloc. And equally so, those from the opposition, they would put their presidential candidate mainly among the Mende-speaking tribe and then move over to somewhere in the north or western area and find somebody to be a running mate in order to be able to capture some votes from there. So that has been their tactic.
Yes. Has there ever been a peaceful transfer of power between the two blocks?
Yes, there has been. The last transfer of power was in 2007, and that has been practically the first peaceful transfer of power. But just after power was transferred, the fighting started. I mean, one political party's headquarter house was virtually almost raised down. The supporters from the new party who had just come in raided the building, destroyed things, I mean, drove them out and that sort of thing. But largely it has been peaceful on that level. That has been the only experience we've had. We don't know whether that would happen again.
Then I think you sit in a better place as a country, because in Kenya, what I would summarize the problem to be as is the fact that there has never been a peaceful transfer of power between the two opposing blocs. And you look deep down the history of the country, these two blocs have always been in competition. What has been changing is the name of political party, maybe the candidate also changes. But what we have seen, especially in the last three election cycles, is a very stiff competition from these two political blocs. Now, the opposition political bloc here complains always that it is denied a chance to even fairly access political power. They do believe that in 2007, Raila Odinga, the opposition leader, won. They also believe that the 2013 election was manipulated in favor of Uhuru Kenyatta. So you at Sierra Leone probably sit in a better space because of the transfer of power, because these success stories can also be said to have happened in Ghana. I think we've seen that transfer of power also in Nigeria. So there are very few success cases out there. And what remains undone in Kenya is that transfer of power from one block to another. It has not happened. It is yet to happen.
Kelvin, have you identified media outlets in Sierra Leone that use a language that may attempt to breach peace and preach intolerance?
Yes, there are. And we've urged the Independent Media Commission to constantly be engaging them. There are media houses who step out of the line and do that. But like I say, these are media houses which are associated more with the ruling party, and so they get away with a lot of things. Those on the other side, if they attempt, then definitely they would be held responsible very quickly. And that is the lack of impartiality, the part of the media commission that we're talking about.
So what is going to be done then?
Well, we believe we should engage, boldly come out with these issues and tell them to their face that this is what is happening and we're not happy with it and you have to go along the proper lines. Otherwise, we'll all be held responsible at the end if anything happens. That is how we've been treating them.
So are there legal action possible against them?
Yes, legal action is possible, but again, you wonder how the courts would rule against the ruling party. We've seen evidences that it is almost not likely. So I see Linus, your surname is Kai Kai. Where did you get that name? Because that's a typical Sierra Leonean name.
You know, in my early reporting days, you guys in Sierra Leone, you used to have a minister called Septimus Kai Kai.
Yes.
And I happened to meet Septimus and I told him I am his distant relative from East Africa and that he has no business fighting for power in Sierra Leone because that's not his home. He needs to move to East Africa as soon as he could. So Kai Kai is a big clan name in this side of the region, and it is from the Maasai community where I come from.
Oh, really? Wow, that's interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Professor Kai Kai is still around, although he's actually a very old man now. Yeah.
Well, Kelvin, we won't hold it against you that you don't have such an exotic surname. Thanks, Kelvin Lewis in Sierra Leone, and thank you, Linus Kai Kai in Kenya, for taking part in this edition of African Media. And it's goodbye from me, Zenat Hansroth.
Thank you so much, Zenat. Thank you so much. Yeah.
Thank you, Zenat.